As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Happy holidays. We should have had a Jingle Bells intro. Do you have your favorite Christmas song? I know Brendan does. Happy holidays, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of
That was a lot. You're really throwing a lot.
This is Brendan Quinn. Tell the people your favorite Christmas song. I know you have one before we get into it.
I'll be home for Christmas.
I was going to say, I know you have many favorite
Christmas songs. Favorite Christmas movie. Obviously, It's a Wonderful Life. Favorite Christmas song. I'll Be Home for Christmas. Obviously, has a Philadelphia reference in it. So
you're not a fan of that
no-brainer.
You're not a fan of that Mariah Carey one that everyone always sings and likes.
I mean, it's catchy.
Yeah, that one.
I mean, I'll bop my head a little bit while.
Are you
Target?
Are you a Bing Crosby guy?
Sure, except for the whole
fact that Bing Crosby.
What's the weird, really creepy song where it's like some girl's locked in some guy's house or something, and he's not letting her go, or maybe it's cold outside.
Buddy,
is that it?
It will come of no surprise to you that the only Christmas music that I like is the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, which is the electric guitar.
I saw them live in college. Where some buddies, they were playing an opera house in Philly.
Yeah.
And me and some buddies, you know, partook in some...
Had a few.
Mind-altering activity, we'll say. And then went and...
Well, that would have been fun, actually. Yeah.
And saw the Trans-Siberian Orchestra with a full laser show. And it was... Whew!
I bet. We got the CDs a couple times. I remember for my mom, my brother and I did one year for Christmas. Because we wanted to listen to it.
You're just young Nick is just jamming out.
Trans-Siberian
the house,
Orchestra,
just,
yeah, that's what we listen
to. The Dwight Schrute.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, happy holidays to all of you out there who
like
normal Christmas music, like Brendan. We figured we would do a mailbag edition of the show today, holiday episode. As basketball seasons are sort of in the middle here, as we talked about, and football is still, maybe next week when we come back after the holiday here, we'll get more into the Orange Bowl and the Peach Bowl. But our gift to you, I did say that we would be talking about people who've wronged us this year. I don't know if I have too many on that list, actually, in reality, that I have to air out on the podcast here, but maybe we'll get into it.
There's a lot that can't
some
be
will trip my mind. Yeah, some will trip my mind in these questions, I'm sure, but... I figured we could take whatever from anybody all over the place. I know we've got questions of all different types. So before we start, do you have any airing of grievances that you'd like to throw out there?
I mean, I have an apology to issue. I have an apology to issue
just
before the year.
Hey, just as good. All right. Floor is yours.
To Nick Sirianni.
Oh, yes. You know what?
And Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles, who I was ready to fire the entire team.
Uh-huh. When they beat the Lions.
Week 4 or week 5, I think. All of a sudden, 7-7, right in the playoff hunt.
Playing good ball, too.
Ninth in the NFL in overall offense?
Yeah, playing really good football.
Have you watched this team? That offensive line is a bunch of dogs.
Yeah, man. I mean, Kelsey's still there, so you know they're going to be good. Mm. But, like, I've seen a little bit of kind of what they're doing anyway in terms of what they're doing with Hurts. And I think, yeah, I think it's starting to work a little bit. I don't know how sustainable it is, but, yeah, if you look at their efficiency numbers, they're really good. I saw that actually today when I was going through some stuff.
They're
a little
just
bit like,
ruining,
whoa, geez, like they really took off.
Ruining teams up front. Yeah, they're
like
seems
like
six
a good match.
Straight games over 175 yards rushing, something fucking crazy.
Yeah, they're
like
just
that.
Leaning into it. I think that like we actually see that a little bit with the Lions. Teams don't know what to do with teams that dedicate themselves to the run. But yeah, apology accepted. Probably not.
So, you know?
On behalf of another Nick, I accept your apology. Long-suffering fan, you deserve it.
I feel like, for the most part, in the past year, most people did their best to not be total assholes, considering everything going on in the world.
We hung in there.
What would be your most memorable episode of the pod? Do you have one of those? Because I have one.
What of the year? You know, honestly, I think, like, there was a three-episode like window we had before Michigan State and Michigan played, but it wasn't even before or the week before. It was like there was like two or three episodes before anybody else was really paying attention to the fact that it was probably going to happen, that both these teams were going to play undefeated. We were the ones that were on board with that, where we're just like just talking, just willing it into existence, more or less, with our hot airbag voices here. But that stretch of time... Those were fun shows because it was weird and fun and, like, it was a good thing. Like, people were like, what the hell's happening? Remember all the Michigan State fans were like, this is bullshit. Like, are we good? I'm not going to sit here and listen to this if you're going to spin fairy tales about how this is good and we're not going to end up being good. I'm not going to have this rug pulled.
Yes.
And you're like, look, I think the team's pretty good. And the Michigan fans were doing the same thing. Remember that whole stretch?
Yeah.
That was a fun couple weeks. It wasn't one.
You were preaching it fairly early that they were legit. And if anything,
both teams.
I was the voice on it that was like, I don't know, Nick. I don't know.
You were not alone.
Both
teams might stink. I had people ready to slit my throat in the, I think it was like Michigan-Rutgers game on Twitter when I was like telling people to calm down about wanting to bench McNamara. And it was like, you guys need to just relax. Why don't you shut the hell up, you idiot? Okay. But we got there. Everybody got there. So... Yep,
okay. If I were going to go back and listen to any one show, it would be the almost a year ago when we were recording live while the Capitol was being stormed and we were both watching. Remember that? We're both watching out of one eye and I'm like, what are we talking about? Nick, are you watching TV?
Because
something's happening.
That was a blur of several
weeks. It went from like, they were like protesting outside when we started it. Started the episode, and then
I don't even
45
think I
minutes into it, they were like at the gates and like up the stairs.
And it was one of those things that I was just like, what's going on here? Like, I think everybody probably had that reaction, right? Where it was like a processing of like, what's this? Is this a movie? Like, what channel is this on? Like, what the hell am I watching?
Yeah.
Is that your favorite show of the year? That might have been like the first show of the year, because that was in January, right?
Yeah, right. It was January 6th.
The debut of 2021. What a start. Hey, we're ending on a better note, anyway.
Thankfully.
The Capitals still standing strong.
Still standing.
As far as we know, today, and hopefully it makes it through the rest of the day. But hey, speaking of Capitals, our first question, speaking of Capitals, comes from the D.C. area and former colleague of both of ours, Kyle Felcher.
Oh.
Kyle's at CNN, right, still?
Yeah.
Kyle's at CNN. He says, what does Quinn have against Barbasol? And does he want to fight me and my immortal can of shaving cream? That is a good question. You did, like, first of all, you thought it was going to be a slam at me for using Barbasol, and I told you I don't use any of that shit. So, like, why do you hate Barbasol? What's going on here? Like, you don't like
it's
the working man's
the,
shaving cream?
It's that, there's something about the
blob.
Like, that, like... I don't even know how to describe it. But
are you
it's
getting
like that
any
initial...
kind of protection there with the Barbasol? Is it even doing anything? Like,
I
mean, that's
I
a fair
know,
question
man.
To ask.
It's
Felcher,
definitely been
right?
the same recipe since like the 60s or the 50s.
Right,
like Don
and
Draper was using
this
it.
This isn't Tabasco, where it's actually like a good product. It was just what was there back in the 50s and 60s.
And the cans are just endless. What is in there?
Oh, I've seen actually, like, have you seen... I mean, there was a time, and it's probably still around, like, you know, YouTube over the years has gone through stretches of trends on videos, as we see, where people would take the shaving cream cans and the toothpaste tubes, and they just empty them out in the sink to be like, how much shit's in here? Let's see it. And I used to watch those, you know, of course, back in my time-killing days. But yeah, a lot.
I mean, my main beef is probably, I'm not anti. My father's a Barbasol man.
Mine too.
Barbasol.
Yeah, long time.
You know,
menthol and the other kind. I think he does both. Or used to anyway.
And with like the little like plastic dollar disposable razors that you buy
at the
grocery store. There's like 500 in a bag.
Yeah, that's what I learned.
When he comes out, he would come out every morning. Goddamn, five little pieces of tissue stuck all over, you know, and he would leave his big baller mustache.
Okay.
But everywhere else, he was just nicked to death every single day.
Really? Oh, man.
That's never
changed. Well, he had to get a better razor, though. That's probably why.
I know. He'd use those little cheap.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
Single blade razors.
So you have more of a ding on the single blade razor than the Barbasol.
That's fair.
Yeah, because, like, my dad would use. That's how I learned how to shave, I think, was Barbasol. But we had, like. I got, like, the Mach 3 Gillette razor. I remember that being pretty cool.
Boy.
Like, the one with, like, the two or three blades on it. So, you know, but yeah, to Felcher's point, I mean, there's probably a better shaving foam choice out there if you're doing that every day.
I use butter.
He's on TV now, of course, so he has to. Felcher probably.
I don't know if they're putting him out
Felcher
for the camera.
Probably
I'm pretty
has
sure he's
to
behind
shave
the scenes.
Like, three times a day or something like that. He's behind the scenes.
I'm pretty sure he's behind the scenes.
Okay.
And he does not need to shave because of that blonde hair. He already looks like he's.
Well, he'll tell us if he's.
He already looks like he's 15 years old. So
he'll let us know if he's on TV and we're slighting him here. We'll move on to the next one. Brett McWethy asks: was Brendan satisfied with his seat at Little Caesars on Tuesday?
I was. It was terrific. Right behind the basket. Right.
You
down
like that?
There, right by the Michigan State bench.
Love it.
All kinds of good color and good sights and sounds, and right down there. Appreciate it.
Brett
always a good game. Massive crowd. They had every bit of 18,000 people in that place.
That's awesome.
You know, that's always a good matchup. And one of these years, man, Oakland's going to do it.
Now,
one of these years.
What's the Campy Juwan relation? Do they talk much? Oakland?
Not that I know of.
I was wondering. I know Michigan State Oakland have their
own
thing.
Their better bet to get a game would be through Saudi, obviously.
Yeah. I just feel like that, like Oakland almost feels like Oakland, Michigan, Michigan State, and one other team in like a foursome of some sort would feel like a cool thing. You know?
They did that the one year. Michigan played Detroit Mercy.
At LCA, right?
It was all at LCA. It was the first year it was open, and they wanted to host some college basketball there.
It'd be a cool thing if they did that.
But they're trying to get the Big Ten tournament in there.
Right, yeah. No, that'd be cool too. I think they'd do really well with that. Like, I've heard other things, like the national championship game or other things like that, and I've wondered if that would do well. I think the Big Ten tournament, though, they would do really well with.
It'd be sweet. I mean, the only question would be the hotels, you know? Like, right now.
Right, it's a challenge.
They put it in
Indy, and that's a real challenge.
It's easy. They put it in Chicago. That's Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, if you're putting it in Detroit, the challenge is hotels.
Yeah, and you've got the arena, you've got the space for it, and you've got all the other stuff. But that's the thing people, I guess, don't probably always totally understand.
I'd be all for it.
I would love it. It'd be great.
Drive from the house, yeah.
People loved it. When they have, anytime they've had the NCAA tournament here, it's great. I mean, it's a pain in the ass travel, as everyone knows, but the environment, the atmosphere, everyone loves it. So I agree. It would be great.
First Sweet 16 I ever covered was in Detroit. First Final Four I ever covered was in Detroit. 2008.
At the Palace and then at the Ford Field, I assume?
I think they were both at Ford Field, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Interesting.
Is that right?
Probably so, yeah.
I think that's right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's see. Here's one from... Oh, I got one. Here's a good one. From Linda. This is one I wanted to talk about. I hate the accordion, because I mentioned on there that you might play the accordion like Tom Izzo, but you're not.
Yeah.
She said it reminds her of Myron Florin and Lawrence Welk. I don't know who I've heard of Lawrence Welk. I don't know who Myron Florin is. Linda's dating me here. Okay, question, she says. What's inside the 800-pound piece of furniture, the Joe Moore Award, that the Michigan offensive line just won? I don't know what's inside of it, but we can talk about the Joe Moore Award if you want to, because I think that's pretty interesting. The Joe Moore Award, which Linda pretty much accurately described as an 800-pound piece of furniture, is a giant, I think it is the biggest college football trophy. It goes to the best offensive line in college football every year. Alabama won it last year. Michigan won it this week, was presented with the trophy earlier this week. The whole group, all the guys that played were all in their uniforms with Sherrod Moore, got a whole photo picture group of it. I saw I saw John Jansen in the photo. I saw a bunch of old offensive linemen hanging around. Really cool award, of course, super well-deserving, and named after the great and one and only Joe Moore, who I sent you the article.
You sure did. Holy hell.
The greatest college football offensive line coach of all time, widely considered, of course, widely considered to be one of the first, maybe not first, but like one of the guys that we all remember is like a long time specialized offensive line coach who could take guys that weren't, you know, of varying athletic skills and get them to perform, just like an outstanding coach. Fired by Bob Davie at Notre Dame in 96 because he was old. Literally told him, "You're old, so I'm firing you." Sued Notre Dame, won, and then was like, "Goodbye forever." Like, that was the end of Joe Moore, but like a legendary coach.
One thing I don't understand is, you know, I'm reading this story.
Would you like it?
And it does sound like he might have hit some players.
Oh, well, yeah. Now.
It does sound like he was running around potentially drinking. Yeah,
might not have been a perfect coach. Had some problems. But in terms of, you know, coaching, a fine tactician. I just think it's a hell of a move
that this is who this award is.
That's him.
Not the Orlando Pace Trophy or something like that. It's after
Joe
this.
Moore. Yeah, the coach. You know, that's interesting who it could be named after otherwise, because it's a unit. It's not one guy. That's the difference, I guess, with this award. That's why it's my favorite award. It's my favorite award because it's an offensive line award, but it's all tied together because it's a team position type thing. So I don't know who else you'd name it after.
Good point.
The Dallas Cowboys 95 offensive line award. Like, I don't know what you're, you know, like the greatest line award, you know, that I don't know. It'd be harder to do. So I don't hate this. Maybe there's a better guy out there, but yeah.
The story you sent me from the Washington Post, this is pretty unrelated, but I did love this paragraph. So this is from Joe Moore's trial.
Yeah. Quote, legendary trial, actually.
From the Washington Post.
Not a good day for Notre Dame.
1998.
Yeah.
In addition, the trial's inside look at the nation's most famous college football program revealed that assistant coaches were present when underage players drank alcohol. One assistant coach was said to be drinking and smoking cigars with players at
That's
a party.
Right.
According to testimony, assistant coaches fought about everything from smoking in meetings to the length of colleagues' lunch hours.
Oh, jeez. The 90s. There we go. Yeah. Well, it was all litigated in court. So, he sued him. Won, like, $1 million, I think. And basically, his lawyer in that story is basically saying, like, the only reason he sued was to prove that Notre Dame willingly broke the law. Anyway, the Joe Moore Award, ladies and gentlemen. Congratulations to Michigan's offensive line.
Is he dead?
Well earned. Yes, he is dead, I believe. Oh, long time, big chain smoker, Joe Moore. If you ever heard or seen any clinic tape of him, you can hear that voice. Joe Moore. Raspy voice. I'm not sure what he died of, though, but I do believe he did die in this 70s.
I feel like this is a put it away for next year athletic story for Nick.
The Joe Moore Award?
Are you volunteering me
for stories? Oh, boy.
I am. I would... I don't know. Joe Moore's
story would probably be pretty good.
Your version of it.
Of the trophy or the man behind the trophy?
I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah, they probably do. Okay, what else we got here? Moving on. Aaron says, is it easier to cover a team you grew up a fan of or one that you have no ties to at all? Is it easier to cover a team that you grew up a fan of? Well, I would say that it's definitely easier to grow up or to cover a team that you grew up knowledgeable about. I would say that, which to me is, you know, as a kid, it's the same thing. Like, you know, I've always talked about it yearly. If there was a good team around here that won games, I rooted for it, you know. So if it's a team around here, I know more about them because I remember them as a kid. And Brandon, I'm sure you're a lot like me. And I know that so many people who work with us are the same way. Like, when we say, as kids, we grabbed the newspaper and just read the whole thing, the sports section, like every single digit of it. That's what we did. That's just what we did. So it's a little different for people like us. And I know that people don't understand that. But to Aaron's question, I would say, I do think it absolutely friggin' helps to have some knowledge of what's happening. Because as someone who has left a place that he knows, and gone somewhere completely foreign, that was hard as shit to get the full, you know, culture and the full feel for all the, you know, what makes it unique. Because every place is unique to the people that are there. That is not easy to do. So it absolutely helps to have some of that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that when you're coming up, if you can remove yourself.
Absolutely, it's better.
And go kind of understand what it's like to write about a place that you have zero emotional connection to, historical connection to, your friends and families don't care about.
No, and have never heard of it. Yeah.
Right. And you are just totally on your own.
Yeah.
And you just have to figure it out and do the research and you know, be able to talk with or write with authority about something that, you know, you're not intimately attached to. It makes you a lot better. It helps a ton.
I mean, it's the most important thing
and,
I ever
and then
did
going
in
back,
my
you know,
career.
and then going back, you know, you can. I think it's fair to. You'll be better off covering something that you know you might have.
That's
like
a great
your
way to
personal
say
it. History yeah. might kind of dictate the way you write about it. Like if you never leave, what's your perspective?
Right.
You know, on that on your home, and some people have done it very well, and some people have not. Like. If I went home, right, and was to cover the Philadelphia Big Five, which is a job that does not exist, really. like my institutional...
Someday, buddy!
My institutional knowledge...
God damn it. Me and you will be the only ones reading it, but someday.
Would be, but that institutional knowledge would be invaluable.
Oh, my God,
remember,
yeah. Right.
You know, I remember every...
Of course.
Team in the city from
1990. It'd probably do pretty well, in fact, yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
But if I had never left there and was still just writing about, like...
Yeah, you'd get lost in the things that don't
the
really...
The St. Joe's Villanova rivalry as if it was still 1995 because I don't know any better, then, yeah, that would be really
shitty
content.
Yeah, I think that the long story short on this, and I'm not sure if Aaron asked this question from a writing standpoint, but it doesn't matter, we'll answer it from that. I know Aaron doesn't care. Is that, you know, for me, and I know for you, it's probably the same thing. Like, going away and doing that was the most important thing I ever did. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't do that. Like, I literally would not be doing this if I didn't have that experience of going somewhere where I knew absolutely nothing. Because you can't learn how to write with authority. And here's your writing tip of the year on the holiday episode. You can't write with authority until you've discovered that you fucking have none. And you need to learn and get some. So... Well, here's one for you. I go to Western Kentucky and I'm covering the Hilltoppers, right? And they're transitioning from, they were transitioning from 1AA to 1A, which at the time that's what it was called. It was the FCS to FBS. I think they were actually changing the names at that time. So it was the whole thing. So they're rebuilding their stadium. They're doing the whole thing. They're trying to play. They're trying to be Boise State, right? And, you know, the stadium was one-sided, right? It had one side. And they were building a second side to the stadium at this time. It was very much a small-time operation trying to be a big-time operation. I was like 22 years old coming down there, and I was, and everything I wrote about it at the very beginning was exactly how you thought, or you're thinking in your head how I wrote about it. This is hilarious. Like, these people are, what are they doing? Like, this is nonsense. And, you know, I probably didn't write it that bad, but it was probably pretty close because I'm sure it got edited down. But there was probably something that slipped through in there of me making of me making some sort of snip or whatever about the one-sided stadium. And I got a call from a guy named Dero Downing, who was, at the time, he was 90-something years old. He's passed away since. Former president of the university, former athletic director of the university, former, I believe, head basketball coach, head baseball coach, star basketball, like, legend at this place, right? Like, his name there was, like, a huge, huge deal.
Yeah.
And he proceeded to just, he didn't motherfuck me, he didn't raise his voice, didn't yell at me. He kept me on the phone for like an hour and made me feel about like a quarter inch tall before sort of telling me it, but then explained to me sort of everything about the whole place, right? Like the whole thing. And that's how I learned. Like, that's how I learned all that stuff. I talked to that guy so many times when I was there. So many times when I was there. And we, you know, developed a relationship, all that sort of thing. If I didn't go through something like that, can you imagine? Like, if I never had somebody pull me over like that at 22 years old or whatever it was, or however age, and say, like, stop being an asshole, you idiot. And I continued to be an asshole and idiot, and will still, I'm sure. But, like, those are things that, you know, help you pull back in and, like, figure things out. And I don't think you get those unless you're putting yourself in those situations. And for me, that I think about that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I had a very similar experience in Tennessee, and it was that kind of think you're so much goddamn smarter than everyone, and then they tell you that you're not goddamn smart and give you some history lessons and, you know, and humble you and all that good stuff and blah,
anytime,
blah, blah.
And anytime I had a question, I would call Mr. Dunn, and he would answer, and he would talk to me about it. You know, like, you meet people like that that, you know, help you and change you and that you never thought, right? You never thought ever would, you never would have expected something like that to come from out of the clear blue sky, right?
And
those are things that, that's perspective,
And you're more likely to ask questions that you legitimately don't know the answer to.
Right.
Yeah. When you never leave a place and you think you know everything, you're asking questions when you already have the answer in your mind.
That's true.
When I was in Tennessee, I didn't know what the hell was going on. And I'm like, wait, what? So who is this? And is that person that? And, you know, and it's, I've always, I was like talking to young writers who are like going to a new place for the first time and being like, what do you do? I'm like, well, first of all, when you get there, look at the retired numbers. Learn who those people are. Because if you ever get caught not knowing who is, who someone is, and their names in the rafters,
it's a
you
problem.
Look terrible. Right.
And if you say anything that, like, slights anyone here or whatever, like, or steps on the wrong thing at the wrong sign, what does that number have to do with anything? Like, all these things, if you have no knowledge of any of it, right? Like, it's sometimes, and if you take the time to learn it, people understand that too, you know, and it makes you better. It makes the whole thing better. So that was a long-winded answer, but well done, I would say. Anyway, what's the next one here? You got any other ones that are catching your fancy?
Yeah, I saw one that I liked. This is from Eli. Can you think of other sporting games or events or occurrences that had as much impact as Michigan beating Ohio State this year? My own experience was Butler's first run of the Final Four my freshman year. It totally changed the prestige and recognition of the university all by itself.
I think this one still needs to... We need to process this one. I still think...
I agree.
Yeah.
If they go and actually... If Michigan goes and wins the national championship...
Right, which, you know, they're two wins away from here.
That Ohio State game, to me, would be the equivalent of, say, Duke beating UNLV in the 91 NCAA tournament, when UNLV was just an absolute machine, murdering everyone. They were on, you know, some 50-game winning streak or whatever the hell it was. They were undefeated that year.
Yeah.
Tark just had it absolutely rolling. And I think they were up. I think UNLV was up at halftime. Duke comes all the way back, and I believe that was, I think, the Christian Leitner's junior year. So they vanquished that. They beat UNLV, and UNLV beat them by like 1,000
the year before. Right.
And so Duke pulls it off by like 2. I think the game was at the RCA Dome.
Yeah.
And in the Final Four, they go on, they win the national championship, the first that K won.
Oh, right.
The next year, that same team comes back. Leitner beats Kentucky in the Elite Eight or Sweet 16, whatever. And they go and win the second national championship. And then suddenly Duke supplants UNLV as the preeminent program in the country. And the rest is history with Krzyzewski.
Yeah. I mean, anything like that, I think, right? It could be. Because there's other things like that. I thought of
the 90s. But if you go and get murdered.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I thought of the old, like, the 80s, 90s NBA succession plans, right? Where it would go from, like, Celtics to Lakers to Pistons to Bulls, where it was like you had to beat a team that was, like, giving you fits to get to where you wanted to go, and then you became, like, this force, more or less. And I'm not saying it's going to be the exact same thing, but I think that's the best-case scenario. That's that's what this becomes.
And then, it's going to be,
you know,
how they not only respond in the Georgia game, you know, if you go and if you lose against Georgia, that I don't think that lessens the value of that win over Ohio State. But then to me, it becomes, how does the program respond to beating Ohio State? And does it continue down this path of kind of forward momentum and forward thinking that it's been on this past year.
Yes.
Or does anyone, including the head man, start to feel like I was right all along?
Yeah.
And other habits creep back. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Is it used as something to propel you forward, or is it, you know?
Yeah, and that's why we'll have to unpack it. I mean, that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, because ultimately, you look back at all those games that you think about, because they are, and there are a bunch of games as examples, because I'll hear people, well, it's never one game. Well, no, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is one. You know, sometimes that's what's needed to get somebody over the top. Like, the big one that I always think about, I think everybody does, is the Boise State beating Oklahoma in that Fiesta Bowl the 1 year. And it's not just that Boise State beat them in the Fiesta Bowl and then just suddenly was this awesome program that everybody knew about. Boise State had been there before, I don't know about in a Power 5 game or whatever like that, or a bowl, BCS Bowl or whatever. But like, they'd been knocking on the door, they'd had a lot of good seasons, and then they just kept doing it. They kept doing it over and over and damn over again. Like, it's in the consistency is what really gets you remembered. So as it unpacks here, I think that you're right in that it's like in that, it could be that. It could be like that. Could be one of those type of wins. Absolutely. Like, absolute, you know, reality-changing course-changing wins. Like, that kind of thing. The biggest you could think of. The only thing bigger would be a national title, right? So, it could, but, yeah, we got to see it sort of unravel here.
I agree with that. All right. Let's see. What else we got here?
How about this one from Sean? 6-7 years in, have you enjoyed the college football playoff era more, less, or the same than the BCS era?
Well, certainly more than the BCS, but it also is like one of those things that just leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, same as the BCS, though, in that sense.
Would still be cool, still be cooler.
And that's why I think everybody goes on that, 8 or 12. Right? That's why people go into, they're like, just bring back the BCS, I feel the same. You know, people go, you know, I think that that's the complaint, but that's also kind of weirdly turned into an argument for the BCS, I think, sometimes in some people's minds, where it's like, no, 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 you don't want to do that. That was a worse version of the exact same thing we're in right here, which was only a slightly better version of that, which, if you go back in time, everyone said would be this exact way. I don't know. I've certainly enjoyed it more, I guess. But I can't, you know, I can't say much more. I don't think it's been, like, that much more. It hasn't been that much cooler. Right? I mean, you've just gotten, like, one more game in there. That was, you know, we've gotten a couple cool semifinal games.
Yeah, I mean...
But
I think you get a team
that you know usually we get the best team, so
I think it's significantly cooler than two teams that you can make a debate, because you know when you're 3 or 4, Jesus, I mean, you're so close, and whoever the fifth team is can complain, but at least the third team's getting in. But, yeah, I mean, the bigger problem is the fact that the construct of college football only allows for basically 5, maybe 6 programs to actually compete for those 4 spots.
Right, exactly.
All right, so you need to get it to 8. You need to really get it to 12 so we can get real weird with it.
Right.
You know.
And you need to move them to the campus.
I want to get some Central Floridas in there, get some of, you know, some of these real randos.
Yeah, playing on campus.
Played on campus is required.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like not even a question. Not even. No. I don't care. You can put the Rose Bowl logo on it.
I don't really understand what the holdup is. Because
call it the Rose Bowl at UCF Stadium. I don't care.
Because there'd be so much money to be made.
It's because of the bowl. You know what? This is a house of cards. This is a house of cards, corporate
the
greed.
The suit carts.
Yeah, it's just...
The suit jackets.
Yeah, anybody, you take away a bowl and it's like, well, you know, I don't know. So, you know, it's one thing after another, and that's all the bullshit.
Sir, we are employing 50 random 60-year-old men wearing blazers, and what the hell are they going to do if they can't go and sell...
Wearing
the importance of the Gator Bowl to everybody.
Wearing these god-awful blazers that are just like the most heinous-looking things you've ever seen. Everywhere they go.
Handing out pamphlets in press boxes because that's important.
Like it's 1986. I mean, that's what it is, right? The Bulls are just of another time. They're of another place in time. They just are. The Bulls that you remember as a kid have been gone for goddamn ever, man. Like, they just have. So I think everybody knows that. I think everybody except for the people at the top seem to understand that, right? So, is what it is.
So there's some news coming into the pod.
Uh-oh.
Good somebody news. Somebody's out of a bowl game.
Oh, what happened?
And it just disappeared from my screen. Of course. Here you go. Texas A&M is out. Speak of the devil. Texas A&M is out of the Gator Bowl.
Because of COVID.
Are you worried at all about the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think you certainly have to be a little bit, yeah. I mean, I think you have to be as much as, you know, anything else. And I think actually someone had even asked one of the Michigan players that not that long ago about making sure they do, you know, more time with the mat, making sure your mask's on in some of these places, making sure you're not doing anything crazy. I think Michigan was getting the booster today or something like this. I think the team was getting that today. So, A&M had been in some real trouble with that. So I think Michigan looks at it as you got to take care of yourself and you hope that the other side takes care of itself and all things go forward. But yeah, I think that all you do is all you can do. And it's like anything else, though, you know, like do what you can. I think that that's how the Gator Bowl's looking for a replacement. I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know how that's going to go. But,
a replacement?
For A&M, for Wake Forest, because they don't have a team now, you know, like they don't have a team they can play.
So they're going to get a team that hasn't been preparing for a bowl game at all? Some team that, like, its season ended 3 weeks ago? Yeah. Congratulations! You're in the Gator Bowl.
Sounds like A&M is down, per Billy Lucci, A&M is down to just 38 scholarship players, 13 available scholarship players on defense. Total. That includes COVID opt-outs, transfers, and season-ending injuries. Which, you know, and then we got the people in here that says not, and also not wanting to pick up your fifth loss. Jesus Christ. Which, you know, people are going to do. But, you know, I mean, I think that in a Gator Bowl situation, that's not the same as a playoff. So I think you have more of a hope, I guess, that the players and people would be taking this more vigilantly than, you know, maybe if it's like, I don't even want to be at this bowl, so I don't care. If I'm a kid and I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, so sometimes that happens. And sadly, maybe that's what's going on there. I don't know. But knock on wood, hopefully everyone on their bowls can get to their bowls and play in them and all that sort of thing. You know, or we can get through all this.
I just love the idea of some team that has just a season ended.
Hey, somebody's chomping at the...
These guys have all been just drinking their asses off.
In bowl reserve?
Doing whatever the hell they want, and now it's going to be like...
Hey, Scott Frost coached the best 2-10 team you've ever seen, so I'm sure he's ready to roll. Like, right? Teams like that, you know?
I think it's going to be like, congratulations, Middle Tennessee State. Get your uniforms out of packaging. You're going to the Gator Bowl.
You've advanced to the Gator Bowl after playing in the Bahamas Bowl. You get two bowls. Can we play again?
I didn't know they already played in one,
well,
to be
they
perfectly
did, they
honest
won.
With you.
So, there you go. Perfect, actually. All right. Moving forward here. Let's see.
Yes, sir.
Here's a good one from Ben. It says, do either of you have a story about working on Christmas, either as a journalist or otherwise? I do.
A what? Have a what?
A story about working on Christmas, either as a journalist or otherwise. Have you ever worked on Christmas?
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, I have. Right, indeed.
I want to hear yours. I'll come up with one.
I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I think I said this to somebody. One of the most depressing moments of my life, and I've had many in my life as someone who goes through these things at a different pace than others. One of the most, though, on a work-related one was, it was in Atlanta, and I was checking checked into the hotel for work, of course, by myself, with the suitcase, at Christmas Eve night. It was Christmas Eve night at, like, 6 p.m. Nobody in the hotel, and this is, like, a beautiful hotel, downtown Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Nobody in the lobby, just me and the, you know, person at the check-in there. And, like, we kind of look at each other, and it's like, God damn, what are we doing here? Like, and it was just...
What a dark moment.
Holy
wow.
shit. Yeah, and it was like... And I had dinner at, like, the, you know, the hotel bar that night or whatever. Like, you know, alone, of course. And it just got worse. You know, as the night went on, and then, like, the next day wasn't much better, you know? It just was a rough... Nothing's open.
Yeah.
You know, you go on the road, nothing's open. So it was during a bowl. So it was for a bowl, right? When Michigan was in the Peach Bowl, they had to go there. I'm trying to think if I've flown on Christmas night in other situations, but I was always at home the day of. That was the only time I'd ever had to go, you know, the night before. I for whatever reason, we had to be there on Christmas Day. The bowl dictated it for whatever goddamn reason, and it was like just the worst. So not great.
I want to say,
airplanes on Christmas can be festive, though. if nothing else,
there's your
in
there's
my
your Christmas
in my ex- in my experience.
Write the lyrics to that. I feel like there was one year way back I was bartending at a place called the Pub of Penn Valley.
Yeah.
And I feel like they were open for like lunch on Christmas. I don't know why they would have been. But
they
were. Like I vividly remember this. But I was like insanely hungover because like
oh yeah, right.
Christmas Eve is that's when you hit it, right?
I mean, I guess. That's when you hit it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I mean in my neighborhood you would go
Thanksgiving Eve was the time around here when you'd hit it.
Well, yeah. Christmas Eve is the same as Thanksgiving Eve and where I'm from, and it would be you do the family thing
and then you go
for dinner on Christmas Eve,
blast
and everyone would
friends.
Meet at the bar at like 10:30, and you know drink until 4, and then make it home for the morning festivities.
Presents.
You know,
get
some scrambled eggs.
The morning festivities, Jesus. Maybe a present or two, and then pass out.
Oh,
let's
see what Santa bring. Oh,
so you're working.
Mom got me
a coffee pot.
A single sweater from L.L. Bean for the sixth year in a row. Thanks. Thank God. Awesome. Thanks, Ma. Oh,
so anyway, shit. You were working on Christmas Day there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was
just
a dreaded thing. And the only ones, you know, who's sitting down at the bar at
Yeah, I also worked
the
restaurant at Christmas.
Kind of absolute
Zenders,
degenerates.
Zenders was open on Christmas Day back then. They were closed on Christmas Eve because the Zenders, the Zender family had their Christmas on Christmas Eve, and we had to. So we all, if you worked there, you worked on Christmas Day. But I think we opened later, so they were closed on Christmas Eve, but they made up for it on Christmas Day with their money. Their big day of like festive eating, and people did go out. Believe it or not, they didn't tip any better. They didn't tip any better, not in my experience.
Okay,
anyway.
Nez asks, thoughts on David Ortiz and his positive PED test getting Hall of Fame votes over Barry Bonds.
We're only doing this because of Nezzy and it's the holiday season.
100%. 100%.
Okay, Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame. I have no qualms about it. I don't know why he's not. I mean, it's ridiculous that he's not. I don't care. I mean, you could take away the steroids and the guy would still have Hall of Fame numbers, I'm pretty sure. I don't know anything about it. I just know he was the best player when I was a kid by like 100 miles every single time, even before he was, you know, the guy with the giant steroid arms and everything else. I mean, if, you know, him and Griffey were the dudes. So, yeah, Bonds is in. Put them in. Put them all in.
I mean...
It's a Hall of Fame. They're there for what you did on the field, and if that means...
I 100%.
You put that in your body to do it, then fine. That's part of the game, and that was part of the game that the game failed to control. So, not the player's fault. Hate the...
Those games were played. Those balls went over the wall.
We all saw them.
I don't care.
Yeah. McGuire, too. Put them all in.
God, and the Baseball Hall of Fame is just as big of a sham as the Heisman...
Yeah, and they're voting.
Trophy, and the, voting policy.
And the voters
well.
Who like to get attention about their ridiculous ballots, you know, you see all that going around.
That's nothing is worse than the NBA Hall of Fame. It is
I don't
the
even
most
understand.
Contrived.
How does that go? I don't even know what.
That's the one. They got the North American committee and the this committee and the that committee.
That's right.
And the
it's
problem
a weird
is like
deal, yeah.
each individual has to, you can either go in as a coach or a player or a contributor, but like. If you go in as a player, but you happen to coach, you don't get that's not counted as like part of your candidacy. Like you can only, like that's one of the reasons Rudy T. It took forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Go in because it wasn't combined. It's just the most asinine. Like your profile in the game is your profile. Why is this so difficult?
Yeah, I think like the Pro Football Hall of Fame has everybody pretty much. Like there's not anybody I can think of that's not. There's probably is, but it's like, I think they, for the most part, get everyone that needs to be in there, and which is kind of what a Hall of Fame should be, should exist for. Everyone that should be in the Hall of Fame is in, right?
Right.
that kind of thing.
Like, you look at someone like
Oh, God.
Like Bill Rafferty. right?
Yeah.
In theory, if you wanted to induct him into the Hall of Fame,
of course,
it would be like as a contributor. So like just as an announcer, and you're like, are you going to put him in the Hall, the Naismith Hall of Fame, just as an announcer? I don't know, but that's like, well, he also coached a bunch of years. He had some
contributions
success coaching,
to basketball.
You know?
I'd say so. Yeah.
And yeah, and he's a figurehead of the game. So like the whole of the of the pieces.
Contributions to the game. Like, Keith Jackson is a college football Hall of Famer because he's, like, the college football. I mean, he was, like, what he did for the game in terms of growth, right? Everyone remembers his voice. Yeah, people like that. Absolutely.
And
that's what's coming up with these... That's what they're there for.
Way of doing things. It's just
to put people who've earned it in. I mean, what it became is this, like, hyper-competitive, it has to be special... You know, and the older these Hall of Fames get, the more griping gets done about, you know, well, you let that guy in, so.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, Jesus, just kick them all out and start it all over again. How about that? How's that sound? Hall of Fame 2, all the way around.
I'd say to Nez, I'm more pissed about Dick Allen not getting in than I am about the votes for David Ortiz or Bonds.
I mean, Bonds should be in over Ortiz. That's ridiculous. Right?
That is ridiculous.
That's insanity. Okay. Keith says, college football has gone through crazy changes in the last 15 to 20 years, which is true. Does college basketball need change as well? Will it get one regardless? And what would you change if, in fact, it needs to be changed?
If I'm commissioner of college basketball and I get to change things?
Does college basketball need a major change, do you think, right now? Is it at a point where it needs... to be thinking about its future, where it all sits.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it actually is. I would argue
it's already. It's like it's undergoing major change. You know, between the transfer rule changing,
I think it's happening.
NIL changing, like these things are happening in real time. I think it's here.
I would say the thing that before you answer there, the thing that gets overlooked. With the college basketball side of this is the changes that we see in college football happen in college basketball too. It's just the leaders in college basketball are usually a lot better at executing them. So we don't hear about them constantly all the time. So change just sort of gradually happens like it's supposed to. And then something just becomes something. But anyway, go ahead. So I think there has been pretty consistent change in college basketball in that 15 to 20 year window. But I do understand the question.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be more worried about change for the negative of the power conferences.
Yeah, sure.
Wanting to have more authority or even their own tournament, you know, and cutting out
would be horrible. Yeah.
The mid-majors, I mean, it would just completely ruin
the
game. And I don't think that's like me coming from the bias that like I like mid-majors.
No, that'd be terrible.
I went to a mid-major and all that. It's just like there's a reason everyone... loves the NCAA tournament, and it's because it's exactly what it is. Like, just don't.
It's a tournament.
Fuck with that.
It's a real, like, just honest to God tournament. Like, the only one we have left.
Like, leave it the way it is. Right. Like, if anything, I'd rather see, you know, an extra bid from a mid major than, you know, seeing the eighth Big Ten team come in, where it's like, great.
Yeah.
Sorry, Minnesota, you and your 9-11 record in the league aren't going to the NCAA tournament. Go home. Enjoy the NIT. I'd rather see, you know, Richmond get in or something. So, I don't know. I don't have any really overarching changes. I'm sure once the minute we record this or stop recording, I'll think of something grandiose. But, I'll tell you what needs to be changed in football.
Yeah, see, then that's my greater point is football is usually more in need.
There has to be, like, this just... the complete lack of oversight on coaches leaving programs at any given time they want is just preposterous. I see these fans out here complaining about players sitting out bullshit bowl games.
I thought we were over that. I thought as a
pop. Oh, it still happens all over the place.
I'm kidding, of course. I knew we weren't.
And then you see, you know, the coach is allowed to just pick up and leave his own team before they play a bowl game.
That's right. Because I think the coaches are now, a lot of coaches are telling on themselves.
What other than...
So listen, a lot of coaches are showing everybody who they are in football. right? So it's up to the recruits and the parents and everybody else to understand. You got to pay attention to some of this stuff. Brian Kelly is a fraud. If he walks into your house,
yeah,
how do you see anything different? And if it ends in a way that is unsavory for you, how else did you expect it to go? So I think that this has been a very telling time in college athletics. Really has. We've seen the people that have been reaching desperately, like Brian Kelly and LSU, frankly, as an institution. There's a lot of things that need to change in college football. I agree. And I think that a lot of things are going through that change. But like I just said, that's why the question is really interesting. In college basketball, those changes happen and we don't look at them. We don't see them go, right? We don't see every inch of growth because like it's a struggle in college football and basketball. I think it's more smooth.
And there's also just like a common understanding of how this needs to work. That like there's lines you don't cross. There's things you don't
do. Yeah, everyone is together.
Do.
Right. Everyone.
Nobody.
Yeah. That's a good
nobody,
point.
You know,
that's really the only
best,
point.
The best mid-major coach in the country who wins his conference tournament, gets his team in the NCAA, is not quitting before the NCAA tournament to go to a high major that has an opening. That's just like, it is unheard of for that to happen. Even in 89 when it happened at Michigan, like Frieder didn't leave.
No,
he accepted a job in principal, which like, you know, does that stuff happen here and there? Yeah, but like,
that's flirting with the line,
coached,
of course,
he would have coached out the NCAA tournament. He wasn't just leaving for Arizona State. Like, the fact that this happens in football, I'm like, how is that allowed to go on? It's crazy to me.
I don't know. I mean, I think that some of the coaches now probably will even justify it more in their heads of like, well, the kids are now getting, they have the ability to get NIL, so I don't feel even slightly bad about any of this. And I think it's just a matter of like, look, man, like that's gonna, I think that's gonna rear its head in football. And I think that's why Brian Kelly and these guys raced to get a 10-year contract as soon as they could, because when NIL finally clicks, it will level a lot of this. It will level a lot of this bullshit. And
wait
it
a
will.
Second. Well, you're not implying that Dabo is not genuine in his complaints about what's going on, because it's evening the gap between what Clemson was able to manipulate and
get away with. I'm going to say that Dabo probably needs to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to navigate his new world like everybody else does. But at the end of the day, like I think that's where this is going to go, and I think we all know that. But there's some people out there right now that are trying their might to not tell on themselves. I think there are a lot of people that are showing their ass. When that kid decommitted or whatever from Florida State to go to Deion's, to Jackson State, Travis, is it Hunter? Not Hunter. What's his last name? I can't think of his last name right now. The corner, the 5-star kid, you know what I'm talking about, the signing day.
Sure.
Look, do you see all the reactions some of the reactions we saw from people on Twitter? The fits being thrown?
Yeah.
Oh, you just buy kids now? And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. Where? Yeah, this is Earth. Have you been here long? Or, like, what's going on here? Like, what are we talking about? The fits being thrown that day. Well, Gene Chizik, you see his tweets out there on Twitter?
Yeah.
Some of these idiots?
I quote tweeted that son of a bitch, yeah.
Gene Chizik, he of $800 million buyout money, all this bullshit, you know, from quitting other jobs, all this. Like, get the hell out of here with this, you clowns. Showing your ass. All these used car sales morons running around. Urban Meyer, the year of his collapse, of course. That stuff's going away. Everybody knows it. Urban said it in his bullshit interview with Ian Rappaport on NFL.com the other day.
Of course. Yeah, state news right there,
he
baby.
He admitted it. My stuff won't work in college anymore either because they don't want to. They're too soft.
Too soft.
That's what it is.
It's society's fault, not mine.
Sure.
It's funny on the NIL stuff, man. Like, I saw it. I got a good look at it close up when I was down in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah,
because I went through Knoxville and I hung with Kennedy Chandler, who this kid, you know, he's a projected borderline lottery pick next year. He's been on the NBA radar for years. Best guy to sign with Tennessee since like Scotty Hobson.
Oh wow!
Big time player. He's top 10 kid. He was the number one rated point guard in the country. Completely changed the possibilities for this year's Tennessee team.
New heights.
He's only going to be there for 1 year, you know. Barnes knows he's going to be there for 1 year. His teammates know he's going to be there for 1 year. But he gives them a shot.
Right.
And it could be, you know, if he's it's just star. The second weekend, that's great. Because they weren't getting there without him.
Right.
And maybe they go further. Who knows? But he's down there in Knoxville. He's got a deal with a trading card company to give him autograph shit.
Oh, that's cool.
He's got a deal with
that's easy enough. Anyway.
Like a local, like Tennessee clothing, like a boutique-y, like UT for people that need like the extra nice
the golf shirts,
Tennessee, you know, Oxford shirt and things like that. Yeah, he's has a deal.
Did you get you a few of those? Them.
Yeah, exactly. That's my style. Tucked it right into my pleated khakis, my boat shoes. That's the uniform down there, man. You got to get
the sunglasses with the rope. There it is.
The sunglasses with the rope.
I always told my wife, I'm going to get a pair of those, and she was like, "No, you're not."
Once you do, you can ride the douche canoe right on out of here, my man. So
the jet ski.
But yeah, you know, he's getting paid, man. And
that's awesome. Yeah, good for
it's, him. What, it. That program.
Yeah, no,
would
I know.
Have.
Yeah.
No one, you know, it would be a non-factor this year, really. But it's one player who completely changes the dynamic.
They're selling tickets because of the guy.
Paid
you
for
know,
it.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and if they go to the Final Four and Tennessee's like, "God damn, Rick Barnes is the best coach ever. Let's give you an extension. Let's bump you up to $4.5 million a year," and Barnes is sitting there saying, "I wouldn't have done shit if I didn't have Kennedy Chandler, if I didn't have Kevin Durant, if I didn't have T.J. Ford.
Right.
Where would you be? Who would you be?"
And I think we need to keep that in mind as we go forward and you hear at bowl season when these seasons wrap up and so-and-so has a good year and it's, "What a job by fill-in-the-blank coach."
I saw Joe Brady got fired from the NFL, so he wasn't a genius.
Right. "What a job.
He just had an NFL offense playing college
football." "What a job by so-and-so and staff really getting this program turned around." Like, so when we do that every single year, maybe that will stop and we'll start to remember who's out there doing a hell of a job getting this program around. It's the guys wearing the helmets every single time. The coaches have to stir it and they have to get it going, but like the ones who navigate this the best are going to be the ones who ride from behind, and the ones who ride out in front are going to be, they're going to flame out. The high dollar coaches, you know, I mean, it's going to be interesting for sure to see how it goes, because I think you're going to have to pay guys to reward them and everything else, but like, man, like this stuff, this bouncing around stuff, I hope you got a plan long term. I really do. I hope it works, because, you know, if the other side has the ability to do the same thing to you now, it changes absolutely everything. And I think everyone knows that deep down. So,
like, anyway. I saw there was one question from Rob who asked, "Do you envision a time where draft eligible players will opt out of CFP games? I hate the thought, but I always think of Jake Butt's bowl injury."
Right.
At this point, I almost want someone to, just
who's
so that
this,
it forces.
I mean,
just so it forces the change of, like, we're putting a full stop on coaches leaving early, on all this stuff, until there's some level of uniformity.
We talked to Duncan about Final Four the one time, remember? So, I mean, like, I don't.
Well, that was more they were going to sit out of protest.
Well,
he's talking about someone who just doesn't want to play because they don't want to get injured.
I think that could be a similar statement. I'm not advocating or whatever. I'm just saying I could see when that question comes up, that's where my head goes. I could see somebody somewhere down the line using that as the you know, if this doesn't continue to progress the way that it needs to progress. And of course, these things take time, but.
Sure.
I could see that being something. Because, I mean, Dunk is not the only one that's ever talked about something like that, of course. Those things have been talked about in hoops for a lot longer than football. You know, this isn't fair, that's not fair. I feel like basketball players were on that train earlier than football players. That's just basketball versus football. I think that's a basketball player versus a football player. Speaking as a football player, of course.
Right.
It's not a bad thing. Just is what it is. And so, yeah, that'd be interesting to see, too. You got any more? We want to ride out of here.
I don't see
happy holidays
anything
to
else.
All the folks. Are you going? To Philly?
I'm not
at all. No,
I'm not. I'm not. I went home a couple weeks ago for my mom's 80th, and I got some shit here to handle, so not making it home. But probably not the best time to travel.
Yeah, probably not.
Through airports and then go see elderly people. I don't know if that's a great idea. I'm boosted. They're boosted, but you know. let's just kind of let the next month play itself out before going and doing anything.
There you go.
So, got like I've, you know, the hope is probably what this thing burns itself out quickly, and you know that we're at the peak right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
Hope
but,
so.
Man, pretty bizarre week to go from being in Memphis where a game is canceled because two players have a positive COVID test.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the arena that they were set to play in didn't even have a mask mandate, but the game was canceled. So, okay, I try to square that. And then I come up here. Michigan game is canceled. And then Michigan State and Oakland play each other in front of 19,000 fans who, like, maybe 5% of folks there in that building were wearing masks, and there's no vax mandate to enter the building.
Right.
So I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
Same as it ever was, I think. Same as it ever was. But
I don't know.
We can't fix that today. We do hope you have a happy holiday, though. But I got to ride out. I got to go do tape with Scott.
Yeah. Yes. And for you doctors out there that want to give me your theories on this, I don't care. So please don't.
Send your emails to I don't care.
But
don't
we
care.
Love you all. We wish you all the greatest of holiday seasons and very Merry Christmas. We appreciate everyone listening. So good health to all. Be sure to tip your bartenders and servers. Happy farewell to you.